New food safety rules, plus a business story about hospice for pets. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. In just 1 week, Treasury Secretary Jack Lew and Federal Reserve Vice Chair Stanley Fischer will meet their counterparts in Beijing for an annual catch-up for representatives of the two biggest economies. It is the worst-kept secret in the financial world that U.S. interest rates are set to go up, if not next month, and very soon after, and that can diminish the value of non-U.S. currencies, like, of course, China's yuan. The meeting will come as China makes its way along a bumpy path of reforms that are supposed to give markets more say in its domestic economy and the government less say. Now, that means slower, but it is hoped, more sustainable growth. Whether China really becomes a market-based economy also has important implications for global trade. Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson explains.
First off, is China a market economy?
I think it would certainly be a stretch to call China a market economy at this stage.
Ishwar Prasad is a professor at Cornell University and former China head at the IMF. But weirdly, whether China is a market economy is not the question. It's whether to give them that label. See, 15 years ago, China joined the World Trade Organization. And part of that agreement was that the country would be labeled a non-market economy for 15 years. Time's up. China thinks it should get its new label. Paul Rosenthal is a partner with the law firm Kelly, Dry & Warren. He represents U.S. manufacturers who really worry about this label change.
It's a real concern about the Chinese being able to unfairly trade in the United States without adequate remedies being applied.
That's the reason the label matters. The change would make it much harder to slap Chinese products with high tariffs if the government finds they're being sold too cheaply, below market, in a way that hurts U.S. producers. I'm Tracy Samuelson for Marketplace.
U.S. financial markets are closed for Memorial Day here. The Dow went into the holiday weekend up 2.6% for the year so far. The S&P 500 year-to-date is about the same. The NASDAQ composite here in 2016 is down 1.5%. London is also closed today for a bank holiday Monday there. The DAX in Germany is up about 0.3%. Today's barbecue, if it's veggie patties or a big old portobello mushroom, then perhaps you can ignore the next item. There are new labeling requirements from the U.S. Department of Agriculture for packages of steak. Producers now have to warn you if your meat has been mechanically tenderized. Cheaper cuts essentially pummeled so they don't seem like shoe leather. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams has more.
Meat producers know people like their meat tender, and so sometimes they tenderize it for you. Randy Phoebus at Kansas State University has studied the process for decades.
A big portion of the steaks that you buy at, you know, your steakhouses and food service, those are tenderized.
Producers use tiny needles or blades to pierce, say, a steak or a roast. But that process can introduce bacteria into the center of the meat. Here's USDA's Kathy Cochran.
Previously, if you went to the store and you bought a steak, you may not know that the product was mechanically tenderized. You can't tell by looking at the surface of the product.
But now you can tell by looking at the label. But that small change can have a hefty price tag. Mark Dopp is with the North American Meat Institute.
Changing labels is not costless, so it doesn't affect every company. But for those companies that it affects, we're talking several $1 million.
And those costs could end up being passed on to the consumer. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
Americans spend about $60 billion a year on our pets. This includes spending on end-of-life for animal companions. From WHYY in Philadelphia, Todd Bookman is the reporter's name. He reports on the rise of palliative care for critters and animal hospice.
Paul Rosin has seen lots of dogs come and go during his 79 years. Suki, you get the sense, wouldn't make his Hall of Fame.
Among the dogs I've had, I would say she's less than average in intelligence.
But what she lacks in brains, the Shaggy White Terrier makes up for in loyalty.
She's been a good companion, and she's surprisingly young. I mean, if you look at her, you wouldn't think she was 15 years old. She's pretty active.
Suki is starting to show her 15 years, though. She's got a heart murmur, arthritis, and she started leaving unwanted puddles around the house. That's prompted a visit from veterinarian Tam Mengine.
Well, we'll go ahead and do her checkup.
Okay.
Mengine is one of a fast-growing number of vets who specialize in end-of-life and palliative care. She avoids aggressive treatments, focusing instead on managing symptoms and reducing pain or anxiety.
Maybe they're sniffing the smells on the porch and watching the birds instead of chasing them through the woods. They're still happy, so why not let them have that joy?
But the pet hospice concept is also for the owners. It helps them avoid hard decisions about expensive treatments and, when the time comes, opt for in-home euthanasia. Danny McVitie is co-founder of Lap of Love, a national franchise of hospice providers.
The greatest gift that we give the pet is the release from pain and suffering. And the greatest gift that we can give the family is the release of guilt and the privacy to grieve.
Lap of Love operates a network of 80 doctors who did more than 15,000 home visits last year. Their clients do pay a premium. In-home euthanasia runs about $250. That's more than most clinics charge. Suki, though, isn't there yet. The vet suggests Paul Rosin start her on a joint supplement for the arthritis. He's determined to enjoy the time they have left.
I give her more treats than I used to. She likes the dried chicken. I used to say, oh, I'll give her one or two a day. You know, I'm a spoiler, but now I give her a lot because what the hell? That's one of the things she really loves.
You only live once, right? In Philadelphia, I'm Todd Bookman for Marketplace.
And the top news in the Silicon Valley in the past few days was the revelation that billionaire investor Peter Thiel was secretly bankrolling Hulk Hogan's successful invasion of privacy lawsuit. That suit led to a $140 million judgment against Gawker Media, which had separately run headlines about Thiel's personal life, a subject which Thiel felt was nobody else's business. But there's word that another Silicon Valley billionaire might help Gawker with its appeal, if not with money, then in spirit. The Associated Press is reporting that First Look Media is trying to get other news organizations to join it in filing briefs in support of Gawker's appeal. First Look is funded by Pierre Omidyar, one of the eBay founders. Gawker may have to put up $50 million bond just to get the appeal going, and First Look argues that is an issue of freedom of the press. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.